But we've got James Kennedy on the line. James, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Paul.
James Kennedy, Jefferson County prosecuting attorney. Is that correct?
And coroner.
And coroner. I can't wait to talk about that. Let's get right into it. So, James, tell us a little bit about yourself and, how you ended up running for office and, who you had to bribe to win. No, wait, don't tell us that. I should state at the beginning of this show, all opinions are my own and not KPTZ's, and James can probably do his own kind of disclaimer, but although you're an elected, you don't have to disclaim anything, right? You can go hog wild.
I guess, but there's still plenty of terrible consequences for me if I were to do that. So I'm gonna be somewhat measured, or try to be.
We will allow you to be measured. Obviously anything that we shouldn't talk about, just feel free to stop me. But it is of interest to me. Did you know when you were running for prosecuting attorney that you would also become the coroner for Jefferson County?
I did, because when I had worked here as a deputy prosecuting attorney from 2014 to 2016, I worked as a deputy coroner, and that same sort of split office also existed in Clallam County, where I worked before returning here. Now, when I came over here from Yakima County, that was just a pure prosecutor's office, and so I saw the job announcement for Jefferson County, and I had seen these before for other smaller counties like Okanagan and Clallam, which I had seen. There are 16 of us total, by the way, who are prosecutor coroners, where the job announcement would list prosecutor and deputy coroner. And I always wondered, what's that about? Do they really expect us to be a coroner? Because, we're attorneys, we've been to law school, we don't really have anything much in the way of coroner training. And when I started working here, I come to realize no, we're definitely coroners.
Well, to be fair, you are a doctor of law, are you not?
I am but most attorneys don't use that title, I think for good reason.
Yeah. You don't want somebody, having a heart attack on the plane and then you're like, oh, I'm a doctor of law. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody wants to do that joke. So you are not a doctor, but you are a coroner. And for most people, I mean, being a coroner in their minds, at least from what we get from TV, is that a coroner is determining the cause of death that is the essence of what a coroner is. Is that true?
At the end of the day, yes, that's correct. We're determining the manner and cause of death that will go on a death certificate, but which will also have many other, potential downstream effects for the surviving members of an individual's family. Mm.
So it goes beyond that, and there are probably then parts of your job you can do as long as it's not about, or parts of a coroner's job you can do as long as it's not specifically related to medical science. Would that be true?
Yes, and so when we determine that an autopsy should be performed, we will arrange that to be done with a pathologist who does that. So we used to have a few freelance pathologists that would come up here upon request, and what we decided to do late last year was to enter into a contract with Kitsap County, because they hired on a full-time medical examiner there, although they're technically a coroner's office still. I think that they're in the manner of maybe transitioning to a full medical examiner. But anyway, they do have a full-time pathologist there, I should say. And so we do contract with them now to do those. And on certain occasions, we will go to King County to their medical examiner's office to have them done.
Mm. So you have people you consult with then, or outsource the work to that you aren't able to do. I'm just continuing on the coroner thing. What percentage of the job of coroner would you say that you actually do versus what you outsource?
that's kind of a hard question to answer because most cases don't require an autopsy, and we're going off sort of the context of the scene and what we know and medical history, and we usually have a pretty good idea of the cause and manner of death. And so most cases don't require an autopsy, and of the ones that we do, usually we're fairly certain what the cause is, but we need, you know, a greater degree of certainty. Or if we suspect that there could be a criminal proceeding, we're going to need to have a way to prove that the cause of death was criminal. So that's why we need to have it established with a degree of medical certainty. So it's hard to say what percentage. Being a small office and a hybrid office, we rely on our community partners to also help us. That would be the sheriff's office and the Port Townsend Police Department, as well as Cossack's Funeral Home. We all worked very closely together on those cases.
Got it. Do you know if, and this is anecdotally, if you don't know it, that's fine, but do you know, are there any like lawyer doctors who happen to also be like coroner and prosecuting attorney and able to do both?
You know, it's funny. I don't, but I do know that lawyer doctors exist.
Okay.
Because the dean of my law school was one, and I don't think any of us could figure out why she chose to be a lawyer, I guess, rather than a medical doctor. She had gone to medical school, graduated, and then decided she didn't like it, and then went to law school and was, you know, number one in her class, and then, you know, basically stayed on as staff and became the dean. I guess more properly she'd be maybe more of an academic than a lawyer, but still. But I do know, to answer your questions, some of the prosecutor coroners who definitely prefer the job of being a coroner to being a prosecutor. I would say that that applies to maybe two out of the 16 of us. The rest of us would be happy to see this office become a separate office. And there is a potential law, or I should say a bill being introduced in Olympia to formally separate these in these smaller counties. And just so your listeners know, it's this coroners and prosecutors are unified in their office for counties under 40,000 people. Once your county hits 40,000 mark is when you get to have a separately elected coroner. The one exception to that is Clallam County, which has a population of about 75,000, and they've kept their coroner prosecutor hybrid. They're a charter county, and I don't fully understand why that was done. I think it was they thought they could save money doing it, but so there's 16 of us, but yeah, most of us prefer to do the prosecution work to the coroner work.
Well, and I want to learn more about what exactly that work is, but I just want to note that my girlfriend believes that doctors, more so than lawyers, are more likely to be psychopaths. and so, but she comes from a family of lawyers, so I don't know if her opinion there is trustworthy, but both professions, you know, and both getting the degree and the time and just sort of mental capacity involved is so intimidating to me that it makes me happy to think that I probably, I don't know, maybe that I'm lazy, but at least I'm not a psychopath.
So I've heard that, you know, there's a certain percentage of the population that are psychopaths. And then of that population, a certain fraction are criminals, a certain fraction are CEOs, and a certain fraction are surgeons, right? I've never seen hard statistics on that. I've just heard that, and I always thought that was kind of funny. I've not heard that apply to lawyers, so I don't know that that would be quite as true of our profession. That's not to say that we don't have our own colorful sorts within our profession, but I haven't met too many that I would think would be psychopaths.
Well, that's good. She's angrily texting me now, so I started something there.
There you go.
Hi, Louisa. So what does a prosecuting attorney do for folks who don't know? I mean, I feel like I know, but I maybe hearing it explained again to me will help me understand. What is your role in Jefferson County in terms of both law enforcement and prosecution?
Yeah, so in other states, we would be known as a district attorney. The state of Washington has chosen the title prosecuting attorney, which I don't think is necessarily the best description because there's a lot more than just prosecution work that falls in this office. But I am basically the county's corporate counsel, and I have my office divided into, I would say, two sections, right? Most prosecutors' offices have three, and I'm not counting the coroner function, and that would be criminal, civil, and child support, but I have child support and, I'm sorry, I think I misspoke, civil, criminal, and child support, and I have civil and child support rolled into one and criminal in the other. Okay, so here's what I do. I prosecute all felonies that happen within the county, regardless of whether it's in the city limits or outside the city limits. I prosecute all the misdemeanors that happen in Jefferson County. I also happen to prosecute the misdemeanors that happen in the city of Port Townsend, but that's because I have an interlocal agreement with the city of Port Townsend to do that work. In other communities, the city would have their own prosecutor and be responsible for the prosecution work that they do on misdemeanors only. All felonies have to come to the county prosecutor, though. So that creates some really bizarre scenarios, for example, where you would have, if you were in King County, you might have a city of Bellevue city attorney who's prosecuting DUIs, which is a gross misdemeanor, making considerably more money than than a deputy prosecutor at the King County prosecutor's office who's prosecuting murderers. And this is a little bit of a tension in the world of prosecution, I would say, between the city folks and the county folks. Now, that may not apply in cities that are a bit more modest, but in some of those wealthy ones, the discrepancy in with respect to also the responsibility can be quite large.
So you'd say that your responsibilities in some ways are... Would you say they're greater, or at least they encompass more details rather than one in a city, perhaps? But the volume is greater in a city in terms of the work that you're doing.
It can be, you know, in the city of Port Townsend, you know, it's not the world's most violent or crime-laden city, so it's fairly modest. But in other cities, that would probably be an accurate description. But because I'm doing it all by contract, it's pretty even. I don't think there's a huge balance towards or away from the city cases that I have with respect to the county cases. About 2/3 of the population live outside the city of Port Townsend. That's probably roughly accurate with respect to the caseloads.
So I think that's, go ahead.
I was going to say, but it's nice because it gives me the flexibility in that if there's a city case that originally gets filed as a misdemeanor, and then we do some further investigation and we find that this may be a felony instead, I can easily elevate it to that. I don't have to go to another office and ask them to review it, and try to shop for a different result. We can do all of that in-house if we think it's supported.
So you were saying before that you're corporate counsel and you're working on contract. So help me understand what that means. Does that mean that we voted for the county to hire you, but that you retain an independence that's different maybe than some other electeds? I mean, is that an accurate representation of your role?
That's pretty close. So yeah, I'm hired by the voters to be the county's attorney. So now we're going to step away from all the criminal stuff that I do, And so any organization, or at least, you know, large organization, has a corporate counsel or an attorney to advise it and to advise the members. And so we advise the county on things like employment law with respect to county employees, land use law. We help draft legislation that our county commissioners look at and pass. When someone, a county department says, hey, I want to do this. Can I do this? Is it legal? We answer those questions. And so a lot of the or also if we're getting sued by a plaintiff or something, you know, that the corporate counsel side is the side that defends the county. Now, that said, we still sometimes contract with outside law firms that might specialize in certain areas that have a level of expertise in something that we don't. We, being the size that we are, we're very much generalists here, and we do specialize in some things. We have a pretty good grasp of, for example, of like public records law. I would say that, you know, any county or city has to have that.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like you're saying that the prosecuting attorney, the Jefferson County prosecuting attorney, also does the work like of a city attorney. If it were like the city of Port Townsend, you're doing the same work that the city attorney does for the city of Port Townsend. Is that true?
Yes, in many ways, yes. And except they're assisting the city, and I'm assisting the county. Correct.
Got it. Okay, but yeah, and the city's not prosecuting anybody. Prosecutions are going to happen through the county seat. Right. But
normally, the city would have to do their own. But like I said, because we have that interlocal agreement, we do it on their behalf. Before we had that agreement, though, the city did have a separate city prosecutor that was representing the city in court. And, you know, really big cities, you know, like Seattle, for example, they have their own court, entirely separate court system as well.
What's the age of the interlocal agreement? How long has that been around?
I believe we entered into that.
No pressure.
It was, I think, May or April of 2019.
Well, so this is actually pretty recent.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
This is actually a really good agreement, by the way. We've got a fantastic working relationship with the city of Port Townsend Police Department, and the city saves a lot of money by this, and the county gains an extra revenue stream that it wouldn't otherwise have. And I think it really is a great benefit to both the city and the county.
Mm. Yeah. And love seeing examples of the city and county actually working together happily. I mean, which I know you guys do all the time, but all the
try to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for the, like, we don't have to get into that, but you know, it's so that's really neat. So before then, what would have had to happen? The city would have to basically bring charges against people directly using their own attorney that they would hire specifically to bring charges against people.
Yes.
Wow. And so that has been eliminated now. And when you're bringing charges, you know, when the city's bringing charges against somebody, they just turn the case over to you and you take care of it. And the city, you know, pays for that service.
Correct.
Wow. Cool. Okay. So that's, hasn't added to your workload so significantly that you regret it at all?
No, not at all. It's been great. You know, we know the police officers with the city. We've worked with them for a long time. We've already, because we also prosecute all the felony cases that happen in the city, you know, we already had that working relationship. And so it was really just a seamless transition. And I think it worked out pretty well.
That's rad. Well, hey, we're going to take a little musical break. And we're talking to James Kennedy, who's the Jefferson County prosecuting attorney and coroner and attorney for everything, you know, because that's such an interesting thing for me to learn, because I figured you were just dealing with criminal prosecutions, criminal, civil, you know, the stuff that would end up in court. But it sounds like your job goes well beyond that.
Yes, and we didn't even get to child support enforcement.
Well, let's talk about that after we listen to this song. Do you want to go ahead and introduce it for us, James?
Yeah, so this is Hybrid Moments by The Misfits. It's a song that's probably about, 40 years old by a punk band from the late 70s, early 80s out of New Jersey. It's a very short song. Most of their songs are not radio-friendly, but this one's pretty short and sweet. I like it. I think it's pretty catchy.
Yes, and 1978, so yeah, I can't even do that math. How old am I? I'm subtracting 2021 from 1978, and I'm getting 43 years old. Okay, here's a 43-year-old Misfit song, and brought to you by Jefferson County Prosecuting Attorney James Kennedy. Like how I put the title in there and then play the Misfit song? Yeah, that's what this is about. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about forensic investigations and child support. Woohoo! APTZ 91.9 FM. We're here with James Kennedy, prosecuting attorney for Jefferson County. Oh, and James, hang on one second. I forgot. I got to play this promo. It's a really good one.
Do you have an old boat in your yard stuck at the bottom of your to-do list? Or maybe an RV, a trailer, a car, or a truck slowly disappearing into the blackberries? How about trading it in for a nice tax credit and getting back some useful real estate? A vehicle donation to KPTZ can get you both and helps us keep bringing you the music and information you want. Go to kptz.org/donateyourvehicle and get all the details.
Tell us about your boat, Mr. Kennedy. Where is it buried, and how long has it been there?
So that promo made me think of something else that's really important that the civil office does. We do code enforcement, too, for the county.
Oh,
so
my God.
For all those boats and cars piled up in people's yards, and the code enforcement person comes by and says, hey, you got too many. We're the ones who handle those cases in court. So I couldn't help but mention that after hearing the promo.
No, I love that. So donate your boat to KPTZ. Somehow, you know, get it dragged away before code enforcement comes after you from the county, which is also James Kennedy's job. In addition to being a coroner, in addition to being a de facto city attorney, county attorney. Yeah, man, that's like, what don't y'all do? Like, I mean, I guess there are probably plenty of examples of things you don't do. But one of the things you do is related to child support. So is that just enforcement, making sure people are paying child support?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, there's two kinds of cases that will come to us. If you are a biological parent, but you are non-custodial, and the other biological parent is on public benefits, let's say TANF, which is the modern name for welfare, or SNAP, which is food stamps, and you are not providing any type of support to the custodial parent, then the state goes after you to reimburse the state for having to support the custodial parent. And we are grant funded by the state of Washington, which is in turn grant funded by the federal government to do that. That's one type of case that we have. The other type of cases are ones where maybe the parent doesn't qualify for public benefits because they make too much money, but they're still, you know, in dire need of that child support, and the other parent, biological but non-custodial parent, isn't paying. And we'll step in and try to enforce those payments.
Got it. Okay.
And that's a public service that we do. It's no cost to the public, and we are also funded to do that. And it's a really important job.
Yeah. No, I mean, because that, and so that would be another job that in a city – like in a city like Seattle, that would be relegated to a different department than the prosecuting attorney's department or the district attorney's department.
You know, I don't know that cities handle that anywhere in the state of Washington. I think that is all counties, and that in a few areas it might be the attorney general's office. But I think by and large, that is done almost exclusively at the county level.
Well, let's move on to your recent appointment to what's called the Forensic Investigations Council. which I read, it oversees the Bureau of Forensic Laboratory Services, and in consultation with the chief of the Washington State Patrol or the chief's designee controls the operation and establishes policies of the Bureau of Forensic Laboratory Services. Whoa. So this is about death investigations, I'm guessing, much like to having to do with your job as a coroner, but then you're also not a doctor. So how does this connect to your work being appointed to this council? And congratulations, of course.
Oh, thank you. So it's not just death. It's going to be blood toxicology or urine toxicology for think about driving under the influence. It's fingerprints, it's tools and markings. So the people who match a bullet to a specific gun it was fired out of, DNA, all of that falls under the view of the council. And so what we have seen in the state of Washington, and if I might get on my soapbox here for just a moment, we have a state that does everything on the cheap. We do everything the cheapest way possible. And so we have a chronically underfunded lab. The lab itself is otherwise very good at what they do, and there's a lot of professionalism there. But part of the problem is that you have these labs that are located in areas that are expensive, and you have lab employees that are not very well compensated. So just to give you an example, we need a new director of the Bureau of Forensic Laboratory Services.
Mm.
The current
in Jefferson County or in the state?
Washington.
Wow.
And so the question that came up is, what is the salary that we're offering here too low? The stated salary for that looks like $175,000. And this is someone that has to be board certified by the National Association of Medical Examiners and board certified in toxicology.
Mm.
Well, most of those people with those qualifications are going to be able to get a salary much higher than that elsewhere. And we also have the toxicology lab, for example, that's in Seattle, and then you have what are known as the crime labs, and those are kind of spread throughout the state, one in Marysville, one in Vancouver, and there's some in Eastern Washington. They also do the drug testing. So, for example, if someone's caught with a controlled substance, one of the things I have to prove at trial is that a lump of crystalline powder or whatever is actually methamphetamine, and so it has to go to the lab for testing. And what's one of the things that's frustrating is that oftentimes you'll have people who are caught with two different kinds of drugs or more. But because of the staffing and the backlog of cases, the laboratory will only test one of those. So you send them methamphetamine and heroin for one case on one person, and they only test one of them.
Mm.
Well, that doesn't work because I have to prove each separate charge. I have to prove that this brown thing is heroin and that clear thing is methamphetamine. It doesn't do me any good really just to establish one of them.
Mm.
Or another anecdote that I have that was really frustrated me in Collin County is I had an individual in Forks who had a very large amount of methamphetamine on him that he was dealing, and he had three bags, two small bags, which only had a couple grams in them, and then a large bag with several ounces in it. Well, the one bag that they tested was one of the little ones rather than the big one. And so, I mean, it was frustrating for me just because that, if I get to show one bag to a jury and say this, one bag is what this think this guy was dealing, I don't want to have the little bag. But there's a lot of budgetary constraints that they have that guide what they do and why they do it. So a lot of the blood cases that we have for DUIs and vehicular assaults and vehicular homicides, when I first started prosecuting in Jefferson County, we could get those results back in 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm.
And then in the past couple of years, it's jumped up to over a year.
Wow.
And so what do I do, right?
Yeah.
One choice is to not file any charges right now and then keep my fingers crossed that that person won't do anything in the community to harm anyone until I get those blood results back, and then I can file it. Or I charge that person right away, and then they might insist on going to trial right away. The state of Washington has a very strong speedy trial rules that allow a criminal defendant to demand that they get to go to have their trial very quickly. Mm. And so then I might not have that evidence in. Or you might have someone who's in jail because of the facts of their case and their history, but then they can't go, or they can't have their trial because they're waiting on the blood evidence to see what it says. I mean, it's really a bad situation for everybody. And that's what made me want to get on this council and join it, because the forensic evidence is, a lot of it's the evidence that we use in court. And by the way, it's all circumstantial evidence. So when you hear people talk about, oh, that's just circumstantial evidence, well, that's frequently the most important evidence that we have. So don't ever let anyone tell you that circumstantial evidence isn't important.
Okay, that's interesting. Just decide that, because what's the opposite of circumstantial evidence in case of what you're talking about?
Direct evidence, which is usually in the form of an eyewitness saying, I saw this person do that, or maybe a video recording or something.
Got it. So most evidence is circumstantial in that case. Stuff that is actually stuff you can touch and feel or smell or whatever.
Right. So think about like DNA on a rape case, right?
Yeah.
Well, the DNA is going to prove that sexual contact happened. DNA by itself doesn't prove rape. Right. So at the same time, one of the elements of rape that I have to prove is the sexual contact. So it's really important that I get that evidence in. And then we're going to look to other bits of evidence to establish whether it was consensual or not. But the DNA by itself doesn't establish that. Mm. You know, having a lot of alcohol in your bloodstream still doesn't establish whether you were driving or not, for example, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So, your role on this council then is really kind of, I mean, you get to soapbox a little bit, which is what I'm learning today, is that, you know, in so many ways that you are, you know, an independent figure who's elected by the voters. Obviously, it makes your job more difficult if you have like a really specific philosophy that you're trying to live by. I mean, you kind of want to be open to different possibilities, but you also want to represent the people who elected you into office. So you have to balance your own personal views with kind of the environment that you're working in. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I do.
So in terms of you, were you always a prosecuting attorney before, or were you did you work as a defense attorney? What was your path to ending up in the place that you are now?
So my path was that when I was in law school, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do at all. And I applied to a bunch of these sort of mid-sized law firms, mid-sized being kind of like maybe 10 to 20 lawyers that sort of were jack of all trades law firms, right? Didn't really have a specialty, general law that, you know, dabbled in lots of different things. That's where I wanted to go. I applied to also the King County Prosecutor's Office and the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office because I thought, well, if it doesn't work out with one of those other law firms, still getting in court and doing trials, that could be interesting. And the only places that showed any interest in hiring me whatsoever were King County and Pierce County. And King County gave me the job first. So that's why I ended up going with them rather than Pierce County, which also worked out because I was living and going to school in King County at the time. And so that gave me my first, you know, real experience. And I really enjoyed it because I was in a courtroom and I was, you know, getting to, you know, make decisions and presentations and arguments and some of the more fun things that I guess attorneys get to do. And one thing that really appealed to me was that, you know, I was coming out of the military at this time, and I had a job where I was commanding convoys in Iraq, and, you know, the decisions that I made doing that had real world consequences, and I I didn't really want to stay in the Army, but I still wanted to have a job where I had a real impact on people and the community, where, you know, the decisions I made could still really help people and benefit people. And so that's why I wanted to stick largely with, why the public service aspect of that work appealed to me. And it's something that once I tried it out at King County, I really just kind of fell in love with it. It was something I really enjoyed doing.
So can defense attorneys and prosecuting attorneys still be friends?
Yeah, we can. And so,
because I've heard things like my defense attorney buds throwing turncoat parties for people who change sides, right? Where they all turn their coats around and lambast the person for leaving the other world behind.
So it's not that uncommon, you know. There are some of the attorneys in my office were prior defense attorneys, and I know defense attorneys who are former prosecutors. And you know, the thing is that it's not always ideological. Sometimes it's just circumstance and economics that drive the decision. And you know, someone who's good at what they do is good at what they do. And there are certain aspects of being a defense attorney that a prosecutor would really have to get trained on and learn how to do. They couldn't just walk into it. And the opposite is true for a defense attorney becoming a prosecutor. Although there's a lot of the job that overlaps, there are certain specific things that defense attorneys never do. And so when they come here, they're somewhat elementary to our job, but they really have to learn how to do them. One example would be charging a crime, right? Defense attorneys never charge crimes. So and that's something that's pretty rudimentary in our office, but it's something that you still have to be trained on how to do. It's a little bit of an art in of itself and can really impact how a case unfolds, how it's done.
Mm. So we're running out of time here. I just want to get a sense from you what you see are the big challenges facing Jefferson County in terms of things that you can have an impact on in your role as the prosecuting attorney. And you know, how you see your role, you know, having an effect on those things. And then you can give me any shout outs you want to give.
So one thing is, you know, victim services and victim advocacy, you know, we're in a jurisdiction where it's very difficult to convict people of sex offenses, whether it's against children or adults, because although I hate the term date rape, you know, the fact is that most of these, you know, sexual assaults happen between people that are acquainted with each other and don't involve use of weapons and don't involve any type of, you know, physical battery aside from the sexual assault itself. And juries seem to be very reluctant to convict people of that. And it's really, you know, it's really hard for someone who's been sexually assaulted to come forward in the first place and to be able to tell someone what happened to them. You know, most of these crimes go unreported. And then, you know, when they do, you know, we have to sit down with them and tell them usually at the outset, like, look, what the jury says is not going to be a validation of to what happened to you. There may be reasons why they, you know, choose to acquit or not. But I do think that the level of sort of victim awareness, especially with sexual assaults, but also domestic violence, is something that our county needs to work on. You know, one of the things that we hear a lot, especially with like child molestation, is, you know, a crime like that doesn't happen on video. It's not recorded, and it doesn't happen in front of other people. It happens in closed-off, one-on-one situations. And what you have is a kid who's going to come forward and say, this happened to me. And that's it. That's usually the only evidence that you have. You know, what other evidence would there be?
Yeah.
And we frequently, you know, have jurors that say, well, I didn't see any evidence. Yes, the kid came forward and testified, but where was the evidence? Well, you know, that is the evidence. And you have to understand that for that type of crime, that's really the only the evidence there's going to be. And if you are of the attitude that that's just not enough, then you've basically greenlighted that type of activity in this county. Mm. If you're just not ever going to believe kids, then you've declared open season on them.
Mm. And how can we change the education there for folks? I mean, is it about a change of education or having more education? What do you think what's a possible solution to this problem?
Well, there's not an easy answer there. You know, this is something we've brainstormed a lot. One of the pet projects that I've been trying to work on, we got kind of derailed by COVID, is seeing if it's feasible in Jefferson County to set up a children's advocacy center. Many other counties have these, typically larger counties, but there are smaller counties that have them too. And I want to see if we can get one going specifically to serve families who are dealing with domestic or sexual abuse, you know, where the children are the victims. And they can also be very effective at raising the awareness and visibility of these offenses. When we talk to people who have had these established in their county, they'll say that the number of cases that get reported skyrocket after these open up, because now families know where to go. Because a lot of the times, you know, these crimes are perpetrated by people they know and people that have power over them. So they don't know where to go because they might have a financial consequence if they report this offense, or they might have some other familial consequence or a housing consequence if they report it, and they don't know what to do. And so having an advocacy center that can stand up for them, raise awareness in the county, and provide them with resources so they don't have to be in these abusive situations can really be helpful.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking to James Kennedy, who's Jefferson County's prosecuting attorney. And I hope we can talk to you again as things go on. And I learned a lot today, and I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we'll have you back again soon. So have a great day, James. And hopefully you don't get any hate mail you'll get love mail for the Misfits. Oh, yeah, which reminds me, Matthew Rondazzo V, our first guest. When I posted on Facebook the promotion for this show, I noted you were going to choose a Misfit song. And Matthew said, if it's Hybrid Moments, I'll host a fundraiser for him for free. and I noted that, dude, it is. And Matthew says, James, I am a man of my word. Call me election cycle. And James does work in the political circle. So you may have gotten a free fundraiser just based entirely on your choice of that song.
I do have to point out that I was not aware of that until you just mentioned that.
I believe you. I believe you. No, I figured you would have chimed in. I was happily surprised too. And Matthew is a man of his word. So, just get ready and make sure it's got like some really good food. You know, I'm thinking like oysters, caviar.
Stuff. Yeah,
I'm ready. Well, thanks again, James, and you go have a great rest of your day. Happy Friday, and we'll talk to you again in a couple months.
All right, you too, Paul. Take care.